From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 31st, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Do we compare our flights we had recently, or do I just launch right into what I want to talk about?
I thought I was going to be able to complain a lot, but I kept waiting for mine to get as bad as yours. It never did. It was close, but not so.
Well, I won't complain about the trip. If you're friends with me on Facebook, you saw it. If you're not, then just know that I was up 24 hours, more than that. And I was sent 2 hours west of where I was supposed to stay, and they said, okay, good luck. They left me there.
SOL is like your life story, isn't
it? It is. The World Series, you know, global travel, SOL. We actually entertained my 7-year-old granddaughter by playing left, right, center, or left, center, right, or however you want to say it, on the floor of the Knoxville Airport baggage claim area. For 2 hours before I waited for my daughter to drive 2 hours west to pick us up. But it was great to go back to North Carolina, you know, and see my family again. And, cause they moved there, about 13, 14 months ago and took the grandkids with them. So it was nice to get together. But one of the best parts about getting together was all of the guys were together for the first time in like a couple of years and we played poker, and I hadn't played poker in so long because just been so busy with everything else. But I gotta tell you, I mean, Rust doesn't even begin to describe my play. It was like, I know you had talked a little bit about how rusty you were recently. And, I mean, I misreading the board, misreading the players, even my shuffling was horrible. Like I realize now how old I am that the oils are gone from like my thumbprints. And so if you don't have the right plastic cards, it's just like chunk, chunk, and then nothing happens. I'm like, damn. And then I got to start doing like those pharaoh shuffles like the magicians do, you know, try to get them mixed up and stuff. And very frustrating. But the reason I'm bringing it up is something real interesting happened. For a while, I had turned into those players that you especially dread at the table. You know,
good body odor.
Oh yeah, I mean, I did stink from that long 24-hour travel that was supposed to take an hour and a half. But you know the type, right? The ones who get it in bad and suck out on you—that was me. I mean, how many times, you know, we always complain about how people have luck against us because we're usually making the correct decisions or getting it in good. I was getting it in bad and sucking out. It was fantastic.
Feels great, doesn't it?
It feels fantastic, you know. And then you know the ones that are. They're overconfident in their hand. And so you read it as, oh, he must be strong because this guy doesn't know any better than to act strong. So he must be strong. And so you fold to him. Then you turn out he's got a pocket eights and you had top pair, top kicker. And that was me too. Like people were folded to my bets and I didn't, you know, and I'm like, is it because I'm that good? It was no, because they thought I was strong and I wasn't. I was just thinking my hand was good and it wasn't. And I tell you, it's true what they say. Ignorance is bliss. If I could go back in time and become that, you know, just learning ABC poker player again, because we played 5 tournaments, you know, 5 little sit and goes over the week, and I won 4 of them, and I finished 3rd in the other one, and there was like 5 of us playing, 4 of us playing. So it was weird. It was great to not have to deal, you know, because the first one out is always has to deal. You know, I never had to deal, and but I was really rusty, and I got nervous a lot, and I'm like, we're not even playing for money. We're playing for fun with the family. But I actually got nervous, so I don't know. I think I need to start playing a little more because I didn't like that feeling. I didn't like the feeling of, you know, being nervous over nothing. But it was great. It was great to play again, and just the memories and the camaraderie and stuff. It was great. Had a great time.
Yeah, it does feel good to get back in, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, it just sounds funny, you know, two owners of a poker media company and a show that's been going on for, what, 16 years, 17 years, something like that. You know, to say, oh my gosh, we miss playing poker. It seems so weird. But, you know, it's all ingrained in us. You know, when we're talking about poker and everything, there's no reason that you can't listen to the show just because we don't play as much as we used to. But it is that much better when we do play. And it was fun. It was fun. I'll probably start playing again, I think, pretty soon.
Yeah, we are having a new bedroom furniture delivered today, and so I had to move everything out of the bedroom, including the Andia poker table. So,
oh wow,
didn't make me think about getting the home game going again. We got one game going, and then we kind of collapsed after that.
So. It'll maybe happen.
We'll get going here again soon.
So. It'll happen.
All right, Houston poker player Sanjeev Vora has bought Johnny Chan's Houston Poker Club 88 Social and renamed it the 101 Poker Club. Vora, a CEO of a petrochemical company, just like I own, says he plans major renovations to the club.
So this club is, what, 13 better than the other club? Well, that's so weird. And the 101, is that like a tip to like California, you think, maybe?
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of was the 101 casino in wine country out in California. I don't know what I don't know how it ties in here. I don't think 101 is a poker term, really, right?
So, no, I don't think so.
Out there, it's a highway, so I don't know. Maybe there's a 101 highway in Houston, or I don't know. Maybe he just likes the number 101. I don't know.
We used to teach poker 101.
Yes, right? There we go.
But that was like the college level course of yeah. You know,
maybe beginners. This is a club for beginners.
Oh, you don't want to play them because you don't know if they're good or not, and they'll probably suck out on you like I did.
Once you've gone pro, you're not allowed in. You lose your amateur status.
That's right. That's right.
But no, it sounds like he's a well-known poker player in the area. As he likes to say, people like him in the game because he's not that good. So he's definitely has a good spirit to him. He's had our general manager. The renovations that he's already done look fantastic. So that it's up and down in Texas with poker, right? So I mean, it's good to see that this down turned into an up, at least for right now. So
I know I'm going to tick off a lot of our listeners, but. I think there was a story this morning, too, I saw where someone was wanting to make the players whole at the other club that had the problems where was it this club? Was he the one that said that?
Yeah.
Oh, he was the one that said it. So that was the other good thing, too. It's not just that, but, I mean, he's going to make them whole again, I think, is what he said, or try to. So.
Yeah, you might have seen a different article than I did. Okay. At least the one I saw, he said they're putting in... I don't know, safety is not the right word, but measures to be sure that what happened before won't happen
Players
this time. So, but again, it's all trust to folks. So, you know, it's tough if you were like if you're in our level, it's no big deal because you can walk in a poker club with a couple of $100. If you get rolled in the parking lot, you know, you'll live, right?
Yeah, your life won't change.
Yeah, but if you're playing those 20, 40 games or those big 10, 20 no-limit games, I mean, what's your choice to, you know, carry around $10K in cash or put in a safe deposit box in the room and hope that someone doesn't
roll you?
That owns it, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But again, that's Texas again. I'm like, I think, you know, 100 years from now when people write the history of Texas poker, I'm like, it really hasn't changed. It's modernized, but it hasn't changed, right? Because you go back to... Doyle Brunson talking about, you know, those road gamblers and, you know, how getting robbed was, you know, just the cost of doing business in those juicy Texas games. And I don't want to say that's the cost of doing business now because obviously we think we're in a more modern state here. But again, we've seen it. I mean, you know, rolling the dice there. So,
well, at least there's, you know, it's exactly what you wanted to happen there with someone that was going to come in, make it a better situation, make the players whole. And, you know, if he does that, those players are going to be loyal to him and keep playing there. You know, they're going to come back because they want their money, but they're also going to come back and say, okay, you know, you made us whole. I owe you this. And so, you know, it's a good business move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, two poker advocates have left us this past week. Henry Orenstein, who patented the whole card camera that revolutionized televised poker, has died at 98. Orenstein, who survived five concentration camps during World War II, created a number of popular toys, including the Transformers. Also, his Orenstein project provided financial assistance to the Jewish community and Holocaust survivors. And former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid died at 82. Reid, who had battled cancer, was known as one of the staunchest supporters of online poker. In 2010, his Internet Poker Act had a chance to pass, but the bill ultimately failed. And then he later flipped and decided he didn't like online poker.
Yeah, but by then it was the end of his career and whatever. But he was a huge supporter of at that time, if it had passed, it wouldn't have mattered what he flipped on. You know what I mean? If it had passed, it had passed. And he could have made a big difference in all of our lives.
Yeah, his article said one of the staunches. I can't think of a more staunch supporter back in the day.
Yeah.
Like gambling than he was. I mean, and he got so close to to getting it passed. And it was interesting. There's a good article on Poker News Daily that I'll recommend our listeners go check out. But they mentioned that, you know, hey, a lot of this, all this big push was before Black Friday, right? So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to even imagine pre-Black Friday now. We're getting old. I mean, I got my AARP application in the mail yesterday. And that's $16 off today. But yeah, it's hard to remember back then, but, it was a different world back then. I mean, people kind of liked the status quo back then. They didn't want to rock the boat unless it was perfect, and there was no such thing as perfect back then. So, it ended up dying. And then the article was mentioned like, hey, maybe if folks could see what's going to happen a couple months later, maybe they wouldn't have been so rigid in their opposition to it. And we would have got that passed. And can you imagine the world now if, had they got that bill passed before Black Friday?
I know. Poker would still be everywhere on TV.
Yeah.
You and I'd be driving our gold Rolls Royces to, you know, to dinner. but it didn't happen. So we need another Harry Reid to step up.
Yeah, and he was a really good guy. He's really interesting. Really kind of heartwarming to read the remembrances of him now. You know, everybody's a hero in death, but he certainly was a very well-respected person. Came from a very small town in Nevada. I know my aunt and uncle used to campaign for him and have fundraisers for him all the time, and they loved him. So he one of those kids that went from a small town to big time.
Indeed.
So,
yeah. Cool.
And then Orenstein, wow. You want to talk about a life story. I mean, talk about feeling like you accomplished nothing in your life a couple months before you turned 50. That's what I feel like after reading Orenstein's obituary. I mean, for us, I mean, the big thing was the whole card camera. And I don't think it's a stretch for us to say that if he didn't invent that, we wouldn't be talking right now, right?
Oh, probably right.
Because it just wouldn't have generated that poker boom that ended up creating Ante Up. So, I mean, somebody probably would have came up with it eventually, but...
Well, I mean, they had the cameras over underneath the tables for a while, I think, before they did the lipstick cams. But, yeah, for America to grab onto it, the Travel Channel, all that stuff, he invented it for here, and it was a big deal. And then after that, it was off and running.
And really, I'm like, just like, I mean, five concentration camps. I mean, I just cheered up reading that. I'm
that's
like,
remarkable.
I've been to Dachau, and I went to Auschwitz, and I'm like, truly two of the most horrifying things I've seen in my life. And to imagine anybody surviving that, alone surviving, getting moved around to five of them surviving it, and then getting on a boat a couple years later and coming to the States and just creating all kinds of stuff.
And great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, if you did any one of the things that Orenstein created, you would consider yourself, like, one of the most amazing people on the earth, right?
Right, exactly.
And he just, like, he didn't have any, I mean, I'm sure he had some misses, and, you know, the obituary, they never go back and talk about all the crap he came up with that didn't go anywhere, but
right.
Certainly didn't seem like he had any misses, right? I mean, he seemed to, like, be able to figure out good. I mean, and a lot of it was so simple, right? I'm like, the whole card camera, so simple. That no one came up with it. Transformers, I'm like, being able to turn a car into a monster. I'm like, it seems so simple now. But
yeah, yeah. And then what it spawned, you know, from that, it just spawned all the cartoons and movies and all this paraphernalia and stuff that just, it's remarkable. And who doesn't know what a Transformer is? You know what I mean? We all know what Transformers are from this one guy. This is crazy. Yeah. Anything he did was basically a home run and worthy of respect.
Yeah, two long lives well lived there. So,
yeah. Ante updates Papes, the Ante Up fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month, and they rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Ante Up Fans Group Facebook page to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Ante Up logo designs on merchandise at anteupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Ante Up Magazine, Ante Up PokerCast, or Ante Up Poker Tour logos. And if you have a hand of the week, especially... listener spotlight or call the floor submission, email podcast@anteupmagazine.com or post in Ante Up Fans Facebook group. It's getting pretty low. I think the coffers are almost empty. Or they will be empty after today. So send us something, or there's no show in the new year, I think.
That's a good threat there.
Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Rivers Casino Schenectady Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. It's Jerry Haynes. He says, in our home tournament, the under-the-gun player shoved all in and action folded to the big blind. The big blind was looking at his cards and considering calling while the dealer was raking in the folded cards. As the small blind mucked, her cards were inadvertently flipped over and the dealer flipped them back. The under the gun saw the cards, but the big blind did not. The big blind felt that since the under the gun got to see the cards, that he should as well. In other words, the person who's yet to act should see them. My initial thought as the dealer was that since she had no more betting that could influence the action, that he did not need to see the cards. However, after a brief discussion, we determined that all players should get to see exposed cards, so we let the big blind see them. Did we get it right?
All right, Elliot says your initial thoughts were correct. You have strong instincts for common sense poker rulings. Show one, show all is an important concept in poker because it maintains the fairness of one player to a hand. Chiefly, it is one of the best rules we have to prevent collusive behavior. In this case, it would not be fair to the original raiser if the last remaining player were shown the cards prior to their acting, as the under-the-gun player acted on their own hand. Without that knowledge. The correct remedy is to keep the cards face down and off to the side, completing the action, then showing the cards to the active players remaining. In this way, all betting rounds are conducted under identical and fair circumstances.
So now, in this situation, that's about as right as you can get it, because there's still a situation where it's unfair, and that would be, not unfair, just terrible that it happened. Because let's say the under-the-gun player has a hand he wants to raise with. And he doesn't need to see the cards, but he's going to raise on it because he likes it and thinks they're worth raising. If he does raise, not the under-the-gun, but the big blind, the under-the-gun player now has that extra information to work on because he got to see those two cards and the blind didn't. So if I were at the big blind, I look down, I have ace-king and I want to raise, but I don't know that the cards that were folded have an ace in them or a king in them. I'm going to raise, but now the other person who maybe has an ace and a king in their hand knows an ace and a king were folded. Now he can react more appropriately on the raise or the re-raise or whatever happened in the hand. And so there's no perfect way to do it, but that's the only scenario I see where that information benefits one player and not the other at that time, because obviously you can't show the person the cards and then, you know what I mean? Because then they can react to them seeing them before they make their raise or whatever. So this is definitely the best way to do it. And I totally agree with showing them after the action ends. It's just terrible that one player got to see him and the other one didn't. And it was between actions.
Well, we got really lucky in this situation because there's two players left in this hand. One's already all in and they're the ones that saw the cards. So, I mean, there's nothing
right
that can affect them. Right. So, and then the other player, his only option is to call or fold, right?
Right.
So, to me, I'm like, when I was reading this first time, like when as Elliot said, Jerry's initial thoughts were exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, there's absolutely no reason for the big blind to see these cards now, because now you're going to give him an unfair advantage that the other player didn't.
Right.
So it seemed like an easy decision to me. I would have liked to have heard that discussion, though, as to the arguments as to why one should see the cards and not the other and get a big advantage. And I think the big blind was arguing the wrong way. He was arguing that it was unfair that he didn't get to see him, but actually it would be unfair for him to see him
right.
in this situation because he'd have information that didn't. Now, think of this the other way. If that player was not all in yet, now that's where it gets really cruddy.
Here. Right, and that's what I was trying to get to. Yeah. So,
at that point, I'm like, I think you do need to show the cards at that point. So, and it's unfortunate for that first person that acted without it. But I guess the way to kind of reconcile that in your mind is, position's important, right? So. Yeah. You know, I mean, it sucks sometimes. I mean, there's no, as you said, there's no fair way in that situation to resolve it. So you got to default to the next best, which is, hey, if you're out of position, you're out of position. next time that happens, you might be in position to benefit from it. So, I mean, don't get too focused on being unfair this time, because it may be in your favor the next time. So,
let me get this straight. So you're thinking that if the under the gun player wasn't all in, it was just a typical raise, and we're in the exact same situation, you think the big blind gets to see the cards before the big blind acts?
I think it's a different discussion at that point.
Okay.
I guess all I'm saying is it's just easy now, because there's no reason for the big blind to see him. I think probably I would still side with not showing them at that point until they've acted on their hand once, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. I think they still need – maybe they get to see them then.
Yeah, but here's the problem in that scenario is that the other player's already seen them, right? So now if the big blind raises, he is without that information, but the other player now gets to act knowing that information, right? So that's where I think it gets tricky in that scenario. You know, here it was easy because there's no other action, so that under the gun player couldn't benefit from seeing those cards, other than just knowing that those two cards exist, right?
Right.
But if there's still an option for the under the gun to play before those cards are revealed, I think at that point it has to be, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I can't see a scenario. I mean, I guess it could probably be talked out of it, but I can't see a scenario where those cards aren't displayed.
I think it has to come after the big blind makes the decision of what he wants to do. So the big blind, I say, because now right now he's complaining, saying, I didn't get to see the cards. So you say, okay, well, act on your hand. And then when you're done acting on your hand, we'll show you the cards, and then we'll go on. So if, that way everyone's got their action done without seeing the cards when their action was actually made. And then now you can move on knowing you both got to see the folded deuce seven.
Yep. Okay. You convinced me. Yep.
Yay. Holy cow. Okay. Now, Scott, sign over the entire company to me. Hey, give me your savings. Okay. But, okay. I agree with that, though. I think that's, it's so amazing, isn't it? How every week we come up with something that it's like, wow, you don't think about that happening, but the perfect storm of it being an all-in player and only one person left to act, and then the cards in between get shown. I mean, you can't come up with this stuff, you know? It's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back, and I'm not trying to make the deal in the situation feel bad, or the small blind, or whoever it was that that resulted in these cards being inadvertently flipped over. But, you know, we're in home games, we're having fun, we're drinking beer, we're telling stories and stuff, so it's hard to always completely focus, but a lot of these scenarios would be fixed if just the dealer takes that deal off of the conversation, the beer drinking, and everything else, and just focuses really hard on the dealing and make sure that this stuff doesn't happen. But,
well, you know, Jerry was probably enjoying a brew, and his hands were a little shaky because he was dealing, apparently.
Yeah, because, you know, he's been rusty, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. We're going to complete O'Malley's move today, which is always great. So we're going to refresh our memories with part one here, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing in a $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. The game is eight-handed. We bought in for $1,500 and currently sit with around $2,500. The small blind posts, we're in the big blind end post. The under the gun raises to $15. The plus one folds, the MP calls, the hijack and cutoff fold, the button calls, the small blind folds, and we look down at the king of hearts, nine of hearts. This seems like a decent hand to see a flop with. Low risk, high reward. We call. With $60 in the pot, the flop is a good one. The queen of hearts, eight of hearts, four of hearts comes down. We check, looking to play this one deceptively. The under the gun checks. The MP bets $40. The button folds, and we go for the check raise. We make it $130 to go. The under the gun calls, but surprisingly, the MP folds. The under the gun is a decent but speculative player. He plays a wide range pre-flop and can sometimes get in trouble after the flop. He started the hand with just under $1,600. There's now roughly 360 in the pot, and the turn is the tray of hearts. This puts four to a flush out there and is a bad card, but not necessarily because it puts us behind. It could, however, kill our action. We decide to continue our aggression. We make it 225 to go. After some thought, our opponent calls. There's now 800 in the pot, and the river is the queen of clubs. Let's go for some value. We make it 225 to go. Our opponent pauses briefly and then shoves, making the bet total 1,200. So, it's 975 to call. What's the move?
Well, this sucks. Or if we're spelled Tampa Tynes, well, this S dash 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 dash.
This stinks.
And then making people, like, you know, think it's the worst word than it really is. But, yeah, the turn and river were killers. The ace of hearts or river boat has his beat. O'Malley's description of our opponent gives me some hope, though. This is really a tough spot and another one of those stare into the soul of our opponent spots. But I think I'm going to call.
Fold. Here's why. Just like the ace of hearts beats us, the person betting knows it beats him too if he doesn't have the ace of hearts. It's just too big of a bluff, I think, for this game. Maybe it's a big enough game. I don't know. But I'm folding. I just can't. I don't have the gumption to call here. I'm putting it down. So, yeah. Here comes part two.
Hello again. Why come alive now? I guess it's possible he has the ace of hearts, but could it be something like the jack of hearts or the ten of hearts value betting? Maybe it's a bluff taking advantage of the scare card on the end. Can we really fold the second nut flush here? I don't think we can. Maybe this is a bad move, but we call. Nut flush, our opponent says, and tables the ace of hearts, ten of hearts. He flopped it, just like we did. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, be careful about big blind specials. They might turn out to be not so special. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, definitely a case of big blind specialitis. I create a shirt for that. Understanding how the human brain works, I think, is a big part of poker, and we tend to get more excited when we flop bad hands big when we get in cheap, like in the big blind, and that definitely played a role here, I think.
Not to say this is Freudian, but on your notes, you wrote, like in the big bind, which I think is really, like, well described for when you're in the big blind. It is a big bind because, you know, you're acting last and, you know, other than the small blind, but they didn't say small bind, so I couldn't make that joke. But it did say big bind. All right, so not exactly how you want the year to end for O'Malley's move, but I just didn't think we were good, and I would have folded, and I'm not rubbing it in or anything, but it's too bad. It's too bad. And like you said, you know, you got these hands that flip pretty good and or flop pretty good, and see, I'm even rusty with my terms.
Yeah,
I got to play more poker, man.
And you used a wrong word in the notes there, so I just corrected it.
Yeah,
so.
What did it say? Two?
It's a two. Two,
yeah, instead of the. I know, we're terrible.
I got your back there. Don't worry.
I think it. Don't send us any hands of the week. The show needs to end. We're just. It's becoming embarrassing.
Oh, man. But yeah, definitely go back. If those of you chart your hands and stuff, it'd be interesting to go back and look at the crappy hands you play in a small blind because it's a dollar to get in. A big blind that, you know, you've already paid, and then see how much money you lose on those when you think you flop big and then you end up losing.
Exactly.
So I really do think that's how the human brain works, is you get excited when it's like getting away with something, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I've got a 7-4 offsuit, and I just flopped a straight. I got away with it, and then you lose the flush, right? So, you know, I just think you overvalue a little bit more that way, so. And it's time for what might be the last hand of the week, because we have no more in the hopper. So if you have any hands of the week, go ahead and send them to us. And if you do, I'm sorry, it's time for the advancedpokertraining.com hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, please. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. If it has to end on somebody's hand, Chris, I'm glad it's Vic G's.
Yes.
He usually sends in like 98, so that shows you how far down in the barrel we've gotten, that we've run out of Vic G hands on top of running out of all hands.
So. He's easily provided the most hands in the history of the show.
Yes, he has. Yes, Bar none. All right, he's playing 1-2 no limit hold'em at one of the South Florida poker rooms. Seven-handed, let's see, the table was joined by a couple well-heeled golfers. Oh, I love the way they sit down.
Yeah.
Both look to have plenty of home game experience. One plays tight, while the other likes to see flops. The latter is in the unfortunate position of being seated on my right, and is the villain in this hand. He starts the hand with a $300 max buy-in. Under the gun folds, LoJack opens for $15, and we are next in the hijack and have the table covered. We look down at the Queen of Hearts, Queen of Spades, or what Amarillo Slim like to call four big fill in the blank.
Oh, nice.
You just it's a podcast. We can say what that, but no.
But we're not gonna. We have class.
I'm gonna make it a game. I'm gonna make a game. You could fill choose your own adventure.
It's like Match Game PM.
Yes, yes. Four big blank.
Hey, did you ever play that game, Cards Against Humanity?
Oh yes, we usually play it every Christmas. Actually,
that's when we played it.
The best day to do it. Well, we didn't have anybody over this year, but for the last several years, we've had after everybody had the little holiday dinners, they all came to our house for dessert and Cards Against Humanity. Yep.
I played it on Christmas, and I had never played it before. And It's funny because now I understand all those Facebook memes when you see those cards.
Yes.
I didn't know what the hell those were. I just laughed at them, but I didn't know what they were. And man, we laughed our butts off. It was hilarious. So I know I'm late to the party, but I don't socialize. I'm a hermit. So to finally do it was fantastic.
The best part of that too is like when we have our older friends over and they don't know some of the terms. The sexual terms.
Yeah, yeah.
They say it out loud, I don't know what that is. And then you have to draw straws on who's going to explain it to grandma.
And we got the bonus 80s, 90s pack that we added too. So that was nice too. But
fantastic.
All right, so I should get to the hand here, right? We have queen.
Anyhow, four big fill in the blank.
All right.
What Charles Nelson Reilly would say.
Yes. Let's see. I guess it depends on what the people behind us have been playing like if they fold to raises and stuff, I might be tricky. But generally, I don't like to be too tricky at a poker table, especially a 1-2 game with tourists and stuff. So I'll probably just pop it and make it like 50 or 45 or something. I mean, it's seven handed, so it's a really strong hand. But you like to be isolated with people that aren't as good as you or. You want to be able to act last, so you want to get the other guys behind you to fold. So I think I might make it 45 or 50.
Yeah, I think the proper poker move is to raise here. Obviously, this is a premium hand, and you want to get paid off for it. I do like some misdirection here, though, for a couple of reasons. One, we're on the hijack, so we're not in a guaranteed position, but we've got good position. And then somebody's already raised, so somebody's already taken the heat fold out the lesser hands, right? So if I feel squirrely, I think I might just call here and conceal my hand and see what happens. I mean, obviously, the danger in that is when that ace or king comes. But honestly, that danger is worse when you raise, because then you have to, have those, stone cold ice in your veins, right, to continue betting with queens when there's an ace or king on board. So it's kind of one of those other reasons that I kind of like the call here, is that ace or king comes and there's some betting action before it gets to us that, I can kind of safely throw these four big blanks into the into the muck at that point. So
Gene Rayburn.
I'm going to call here. I feel like being creative today, so that's why I'm going to call here. But the proper poker move is to raise.
You sound like Gene Rayburn the way you said it, too. That's why I was laughing. Four big blanks.
With really big mics. Always liked that one. And then, the other shows, they were big and fat, but his was always that.
It was like a P on the end of a stick.
It's like a baton from a baton twirler, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, big size with you. He says we're putting in a raise 100% of the time, especially at a seven-handed table full of tight old regulars and two golfers. We make it $40 to go and get heads up with the initial raiser.
Okay.
All right, pot is $76 after the rake, and the flop is the Jack of Hearts, Seven of Diamonds, Tray of Clubs. Villain checks, and the action is on us.
Well, obviously it's pretty standard. It's a great flop for us. Straights are, somebody could have 8-9 and pop a 10, or somebody could have 9-10 and pop an 8 or something, but three suits, I doubt the guy raising in the low jack has 5-6 and 9-10, but he might. Could have ace-jack, and want to just check raise us or something, which is great. The only hand we're fearing really is jack-jack, king-king, and ace-ace, which, you think being a golfer, as he said, that they might have repopped us pre-flop if they had a hand like king-king or ace-ace, so they didn't. So it's hard to imagine them being that tricky. So I think we're good here.
Yeah, I think we're only dead the jacks here. I mean, sevens and trays possibly, but I think we're only dead the jacks.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, aces, kings would have re-raced, or should have re-raced. But again, that's the whole reason I wouldn't have raised my queens, the conceal. So, but anyhow.
So I like a bet here. The pot's 76. You know, we tend to bet half pot when it's after the flop. So, I mean, $40 is probably right, which is what we bet pre-flop. So, you know, $40 is pretty good. So let's make it 40.
Yep. I agree. Absolutely. All right. Vic says this was a great flop for our hand. Nice and dry with jack high.
Yeah.
We decided to continue with a $50 bet. If he has a jack, we should have him hooked. He's seen me raise players off pots before, so he'll call pretty wide. He thinks for a moment and then calls to $50. I almost thought he was going to raise there for a second. Pot's now at 176. The turn is the five of hearts. So our board now is jack of hearts, seven of diamonds, tray of clubs, five of hearts. And our villain now boldly counts out three stacks of five $5 chips each and slides them in the pot. So it's $75 to us.
Interesting that he just wakes up and bets now. It's not like he... I don't think he'd be doing that if he picked up a heart draw with one card to come. So I'm not thinking flush, you know, flush draw. I don't think he's got 6-4. That doesn't make sense.
Nope. Yeah, that 5 really shouldn't have changed anything here.
Yeah. I feel like if I'm Vic, I want to get as much money out of this guy as possible. So I think that he might raise here. There's a reason to call if you think he'll check the river. I don't think he's bluffing us. I think he likes his hand. Yeah. It's just whether or not his hand's better than ours. This gets back
really
to the whole...
screaming ace-jack to me right now, I think, which is great for us. And it's going to be really bad if it's jack-jack.
Yeah. I feel like it gets back to that rusty conversation we had earlier about, is this guy bad enough at poker that you have to read him as, okay, he thinks he's really strong, but his hand's not as strong as ours? Or is he really crafty, and now he's making us think more than we need to? I don't know. I like a raise, so I like making it. Well, if the guy had 300.
Yeah, I mean, really, at this point, you just need to shove, I think.
Yeah, shove.
He's at, like, less than half of his stack, so he's, like, at, what, probably 160 now, I think, is what I figured.
Yeah, you're going to make it 150, you might as well just shove.
Yeah,
And the hand is over.
Yep, yeah. And I think that's what I need to do here. You know, obviously, I mean, we're not drawing dead here, right? If he's got jacks, we still got outs.
Right, we're two outs.
Two, but, you know, we still got outs, you know. Those other four big blanks.
I mean, we're only drawn dead to a straight, and that straight is, it seems to be impossible that someone would have raised and called a raise with 4-6.
If he turns over straight there, I'm quitting poker for forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's not even in my range here, or his range, so I don't think so. Yeah, I'm shoving here.
Yep.
All right. He says, the villain only has 135 behind, but how on earth does the five of hearts improve his hand? If he flopped a set, the five of hearts isn't that scary, so he should check again and allow me to bet. There's no way he played 6-4, right?
Right.
I think that this is a spot where we have to either jam or fold, and with the overpair and our reputation, it's an easy jam. We move all in, hoping that we made the correct decision. And curious to see what crazy cards we might be up against. The villain snap calls and tables the jack of clubs, five of spades.
Oh, no way.
I guess he got me. He played this for $40 pre-flop with only a $300 starting stack. How did I get invited to this home game?
Wow.
Half-heartedly apologize as I river the queen of clubs and drag the almost $600 pot to Feltim. Players checks on table 21.
Holy cow. See, he deserves to lose all his chips. He deserves to get sucked out on. That's just, what are you thinking? I mean, how many times is he going to lose a ton of money with that hand versus getting this magical five of hearts on the turn to give him that hand? You know, that's insane.
Yeah. And not even suited. Again, we keep talking about suited doesn't mean that much, but oh my, at least that for a beginning player or a not great player, which is clearly one of the two of these for this guy.
Right.
you somewhat, you're like, you're less surprised when it's suited because you know people like, hey, maybe I'll flop the flush here. It wasn't even suited.
Oh, man. That's just
insane. Great possibilities. I'm like, hey, this is almost as bad as a hand gets here. And I mean that because, you know, you get excited, and this is what happens. He got excited because he flopped that jack with that crappy kicker. You know, if you're playing like seven deuce, then you flop that seven and you're not as excited. But, you know, you flop this jack, you get excited. And he was dead because he got excited, and then he picks up the miracle turn. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, if we went back in time and said, and didn't know this now, and said, okay, come up with every hand that could possibly make that raise and have us beat, you would never say jack five. You just wouldn't. You'd be like, it's got
to
be
a long time to get the jack five.
It would take, it's like the 17th choice or something. I don't know, but wow. And he even said it a little bit in his description. He's like, how did that five help him? And yeah, it's like, it couldn't have. And it did. It's insane.
Well, we both said that right away. That five was meaningless.
So. Yep. Yep. Oh, man.
Yep. But not, I guess.
So you go back to the beginning and you say, okay, this guy raised 15 in the low jack with jack five off. At a table of people in South Florida, he doesn't know that South Florida is a hotbed for gambling and poker. I mean, you don't know how. What is he thinking? And then he gets a re-raise and then says, ah, yeah, what the hell? You know, my jack five off is probably still good. I might flop a jack. You know, he gets re-raised and calls. You got to get this guy in the home game. Whenever we get that game back together, ask Vic for his vitals. I want his information.
Well, yeah, and we're saying that, I agree with you too, but I'm like, the one thing that this guy's got going for him now is that you got to pump the brakes a little bit now, because if he's willing to play jack five for a raise, I mean, we got the best of him here by hitting that two outer, right? But I mean, imagine like if the next hand for Big G was the same guy, I'm like, we wouldn't be having the same discussion, right?
Yeah.
We would not be saying that five could not have helped him, because very looking about. So I'm like, you know, so there is a little bit of genius in being clueless like this, and so I mean, it's a tough guy to play against now. I mean, obviously, long term statistically, we're gonna make a lot of money off him, but short term, I mean, you know, who knows?
Yeah,
he had the best now, but he could get the best of us with crappy two pair next hands. So,
and it wasn't a pure miracle that he hit, because they actually had eight outs. If you think about it, three sevens and three threes.
Yeah,
also gives him the winning hand. So it wasn't like he got it in really bad.
The jacks too. So.
Yeah, well, the jacks would have given him the other guy a full house, and wouldn't have given us. So we had to have the three sevens and three trays give us the winning hand plus the two queens.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. Right? I thought you- Yeah, not us. Yeah.
So we could have, you know, we could have rivered more than just a queen to beat him. But still, it's still kind of a whoops, you know, and then you step in it. But hey, you shouldn't have been up against that anyway, which is the beauty of the game. I mean, that's why the incomplete information is what makes this game so special, you know, why it's so easy to play and so hard to master. But wow, Jack Five. That's Motown, baby. Motown. All right, so for the last time in 2021, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.